Welcome to our next English Mindway podcast episode. My name is Martina Weifenbach and I'm very excited to be here today with Emma Howard-Meissier. Hi Emma, and a warm welcome.
Hello, and thank you for the welcome.
Yeah, I don't know if you know that, Emma, but in this podcast here, we discuss mindfulness, innovation, and new ways to work to creating basically a good workplace. This Mindway podcast is for leaders, visionaries, and everyone who wants to shape their workplace mindfully. And for our conversations, we always choose one word. And the word that I picked today for our episode is safe space. So we will see where we end up with this theme and this topic. Yeah, I usually just trust my intuition and something comes up and it's mostly working really well.
So, your intuition is bang on because this is the word of my sort of last few months. So
oh, really?
We're quite aligned without even talking about it. So it's great.
That's wonderful. That's yeah, that should be great. So for our listeners here today, Emma and I have met, I think, six or seven months ago. We were on a training together. Maybe we talk about this a little bit more later on. But why I really invited Emma is because I wanted to talk today about mental health and mental health in the workplace. And just the general thing I see in the workplace is that there are a couple of challenges we really need to address and talk about, maybe even to become more aware of what we can do, how we can offer support, or maybe sometimes how we can just be okay with not offering support. We will see where all of this goes. But before I go deeper into the topic, Emma, maybe you just want to briefly introduce yourself to our audience today.
Sure. So my name's Emma. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I also do cold therapy as well. So I'm working at the moment in a prison, but also run my own private practice, and I run workshops. For breath work and cold therapy. So a lot of different things. And it's nice to be on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, all the things you do basically are a way to create well-being. I would translate it this way. Maybe psychological, physiological, emotional well-being. And I think for me, that's where it all comes together. We all pack our toolbox and then we see what we can offer to the people that come to us, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And I always try and get as many more tools as I can because, that's what makes it interesting, but that's the most helpful for people too.
Yeah, I think that's really amazing. So I've met you, I said, a couple of months ago, and I can really say our conversations helped me a lot to get more clarity, to look at some vulnerabilities in my life. And yeah, it was just really, really great. I'm still kind of sitting on some things and I've moved on from others. And now I wanted to ask the first question today. What do you think, Emma, is your superpower? And why do you think that is?
I think for me, one of the big ones is vulnerability, but like using vulnerability as a source to empower others to connect with their own. And the reason I think that is it's the thing that stems across all of anything you're doing with mental health, because ultimately I think underneath a lot of the pain, if you keep on going down, one of the big things is shame. I am not good enough, I am bad. So the ability to sort of model vulnerability in a way that's helpful for people allows people to connect with that in a non-shame-based place, work through it and move on. And I think using that with individuals, but also with teams, is a real strength of mine. Because it's when we pretend we've got it all together and everything is just ticking away that a lot of the problems start for people.
Hmm. Wow, that's so powerful. I mean, we start with vulnerability and shame as the next go-to place. And I think by just saying this, you already trigger so much in people. I noticed it just now in me. I was like, wow, we're digging right in there. And so maybe you can just briefly relate this to the safe space, our chosen word today. Like, what does the safe place mean to you?
For me, there's two different things I'm holding, I think, about safe place. So one of them is that creating a safe place for someone. It isn't about having a perfect therapy room. it isn't about having, you know, your chairs in a perfect angle or the right light. A safe place in therapy or in the workplace is the person that you're meeting, the community that you're in, creating a space in which you can show up with all of you. And I think some of the most powerful work I've done is in some tiny little box rooms which are leaking, but the person feels safe.
Mm.
So you've got that. That's one of the things. But also in safe place, I think about, so as part of a trauma treatment or when you're doing work with people, I do try a lot of imagery. So what we do is, you know, as part of the protocol of a lot of different therapies, is we help people to, you know, like our minds can cause us so many problems. If we imagine something bad's going to happen, if I imagine coming onto this podcast and not knowing what to say and going bright red here, I can put myself into a state of threat. So it's great you did the three breaths, you know, to help me with that one. But we can also choose to use our mind to put us in a place of safety, a place of calm. And so safe place, actually what we do with people is we can talk them through sort of doing some breathing, but we actually get them to imagine in their head a place that feels safe. And we build that up. And the stronger it gets for someone, the more they can actually use that as a tool to help them before a challenging sort of situation that's coming up. And it's also used in trauma work too, people. But it's funny that this is what the concept's coming up, is that I have just recently started using AI with people to actually create what they see in their head in a visual image. And it's such a powerful sort of like, you know, tool in which you kind of bring together AI with this visual that, you know, people can see what's in there, you know. And so I get people to describe it to me. The more they describe it, the more it becomes real. And the more it becomes real in the head, the more powerful the tool it is for them. So, you know, everything. How did you feel? What was going on? So you get all that description, you put it into AI and create these beautiful images. And they're not quite right at first, but it's a bit of an iterative process. It'd be like, okay, that needs to change, that needs to change. And the process of doing it together is where you're actually creating that connection and that you're going off and doing something. Because I think it shows that you're thinking about them. So I've been using that as a tool recently, and I'm loving it. It's the thing I'm really enjoying. But I've been doing it with some of the guys I'm working with in prison, because, you know, prison has the most traumatized population of people, and it's not an easy place to be. And so in a few of people's cells I've been working with, they've got an image of this safe place they've created as their work. Helps them to regulate, and actually they're less likely to come angry and respond with that response. They're more likely to be able to be regulated, use that as a way to actually make active choices, which is better for them and for all of us. So, and I've gone off on a tangent a little bit there, but it's something I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I love this. I really love this. I mean, I remember you telling me about the little box that you worked in. But I think what you just described is such a beautiful and powerful way also to use new technology. I mean, a lot of people are afraid of AI. I talk so much about the fears around new technology and AI, whereas you're using this, I would translate it as a co-creative innovation process for mental health, which is amazing, I think. And yeah, just holding this safe space in so many ways is really, really powerful. And I was just really inspired thinking, ha, that's so cool. How can I use this for myself? What would my imagery look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can create one for you. We can do it together.
Yeah, I would really like that. I had some things in my mind just now. No, but I know this. I very often start meditations with just creating a sense of safety. Like then I ask myself, where do you feel safe in your body? Where do you feel safe? Like in this room right now. And then just starting with this safety helps me a lot to relax and then to have really powerful experiences in either breathwork sessions or in my meditations or whatever happens in my mind.
Yeah, amazing. And I'm also curious, and you don't have to say, but what came into your head? Because you said you had a few ideas. So I'm just wondering if a particular like landscape or space came up.
Yeah.
If you're happy to share.
It's beach It's a wide horizon. It's a sunset. I have this picture in my head and have been having this for a while of my perfect spot. And that came to mind. And also like where I would be sitting and how I would be feeling in this kind of, in this seat.
Yeah, that's lovely. And just even talking it through, you know, I'm imagining it and I'm like, ah, I wouldn't mind being there myself. So thank you for sharing.
Hey, you're welcome. So, I mean, you already said you're working in a prison, but you also work, I think, with people privately. So you see all kinds of people, traumas, experiences, vulnerabilities. And I mean, you also know a little bit about my work that I've focused mostly with Mindway on working in workplaces, in larger corporations and organizations. And what I see is a real increase in, well, I would say it in mental health challenges. I see a lot of burnout, or at least the word is being used a lot. I want to put it this way. I hear a lot about depression. I see a lot of anxiety, very negative thinking, and all those things. And when we look at general sick days, we see the numbers increasing. So a question I really wanted to ask you is, what do you observe in maybe in society or even in workplaces? What's your view on what I just shared?
I think in the UK, they're saying the figures people are saying since the pandemic, like a third more people are saying their mental health has deteriorated since then. And it's what you see, too. You know, I think it is not just looking within my work at waiting lists. It's looking at, you know, your neighbours and your friends, and looking at yourself as well. And you can see that actually we've all been through this really, really challenging event together. And if you think about like a child that goes through something really awful, what do they need afterwards? What they need afterwards is people to be around, for them to be able to start like testing the water, for them to feel, you know, have a consistent, safe, trusting space so they can start building themselves and growing their confidence. But they also need to be told that it's over, that thing they went through. And what did we get after the pandemic? We didn't get much. Okay, this is finished, because it was so uncertain and very vague in terms of what was going to happen next, right? So there was no like, it's safe now. It was just like a thing gradually that kind of tailed off. We didn't get any extra support or any extra space. In fact, lots of people were having to work more. And then whilst people were in the pandemic, very different things happened for people. You know, people were having babies who were then disconnected from communities at the time they needed it the most. People, you know, coming away maybe from the workplace and actually realizing they've experienced, you know, a lot of trauma, or they have someone that they're having to care for at home. And then when they go then back to the workplace, it's like, well, how do I do this? So there's been so much change and so much obstacles that people have faced, but we actually now have less support than we did before, because we have people coming out of caring professions, because a lot of people in those professions actually experience so much themselves. They've had, you know, some people have changed careers, but also in the UK, we've had Brexit and we've lost a lot of staff and food. So there's a lot that you reserve. I think we need more and more. Anyone who wants to come into a mental health profession, I'm like, yes, we really need you. And I think that, you know, within workplaces, there needs to be more conversations around how do we all look after ourselves and others, and get sort of more support so we can get to be that child who can test the waters and it feels safe and build yourself up again. And that doesn't just happen straight away. And everyone's experience of this has been different. So the support that's needed, the environment that's needed.
I mean, you said so much that I just want to go deeper into, but there is one thing that really struck me right now, which was like, okay, when we get out of a critical and challenging situation like the pandemic, we need to feel safe again. And then I just thought about like the book that I recently published, and the whole book is about the crisis that came actually after that, like the wars and the uncertainty in the world, and then the whole topic about the climate crisis. I mean, it's not like the climate crisis wasn't there before, but somehow it all kind of accumulates right now and comes together. And I was like, I feel the world is getting more uncertain, at least it feels more uncertain. And when we talk about this all the time and we see it in the media all the time, it's almost like, where can we create safe spaces and how, when all seems to be so uncertain?
Yeah. And the more we're saying safe space, which is being, I'm hearing it more and more often. The reason we're hearing it more is because places don't feel safe. So we're only having to create places that are safe because the world isn't feeling like that. So it's telling you something as soon as we say, okay, how do we create a safe place?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, when you talk about something, something needs to be addressed, whereas when you don't talk about it, that's actually where the safety lies.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just looking at the workplace, maybe let's go a little bit deeper there, because you just said it, people have had children, they got back to the workplace, other people were taking care of their parents. I mean, we have like this caretaking in both directions, basically. Then we have to take care maybe of our colleagues, our peers, friends, others have lost friends and social settings. What I see actually a lot is also people retreating into like working from home and like isolating themselves almost, which is another tendency that I'm seeing. And then there is this, on the one hand, what I see a lot of talk about, I call it burnout. Yeah. And on the other hand, I see especially people in leadership positions who are so overwhelmed that they don't want to talk about emotions anymore. So we have like both ends of the spectrum. Maybe if you could help us just briefly, how do we notice maybe in colleagues or in peers when something is going on, like mentally going on, when something is challenging for people, how can we first maybe create an awareness and then be there for others without maybe even burning ourselves out?
Yeah, I think one of the things that goes straight away is sort of that playfulness. Mm. So if someone, you know, would normally like crack a joke or like be able to be a bit playful and silly with you, if that starts to go, you know that they're already starting to experience quite a lot of stress, because, you know, we need to be relaxed and present to be playful and explorative. Also, if someone, you know, who's quite a creative person gets quite rigid with ideas, that's something to pay attention to. And how someone holds their body, really key one. So, you know, you can really tell, you can feel it. Like, you're sitting with someone and you can, like, if I'm sitting like this, you can feel it just when you're sitting with someone. So how do you feel when you're sitting with someone? Like, pay attention to that. So if normally you're sitting with someone, actually, you're feeling quite relaxed, you go away feeling really good. If that then starts to change and you're like, you feel a little bit stressed in yourself, or, and it's not to do with your own, what's going on for you, it's just an indication that actually that's probably something they're sitting with. There's a few little subtle things I think you can notice before you get to the person's actually kind of a little bit further down the line, when it's much harder to fit, like sort of have a sort of intervention or help. Like, these are the bits that happen at the beginning.
Mm. So you're saying basically first create an awareness of what's going on, maybe with yourself and the other person. Mm. And then once you have kind of become aware that something is going on, like a tension in your body, or maybe you just, you notice that this person has been very rigid for a while, what, especially people in leadership positions, what can they do next? What, in a healthy way?
It depends on your relationship with the person, right? So I think if you're in a leadership role, one of the best things you can possibly do to help someone who's struggling is model your own vulnerability. Mm. Because if you look like you've totally got it together and you've never struggled in your life, how is that person ever going to be able to say, I'm struggling? So model that, because we've all struggled. Life is tough. We all have various different challenges. We all experience at some point loss and grief and pain and have things we have to get through. So use your own, when you're comfortable to, your own vulnerability to show that actually it's okay to struggle. And allow someone to feel safe enough with you to be able to actually tell you what's going on. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to really help them.
Mm. So basically, being a role model on the one hand, and then creating a safe space and an invitation for conversation on these topics. And I think I would like to add something, maybe, and also just be aware that you need to make time to be the role model and to be kind of open to the conversations then as well. Yeah, I hear so many people, like, even more with this sentence now, I don't have time. I don't have time for this. So, like, I don't have time for myself. Why would I even have time for other people? And I think that's crucial, right?
And that's when you're saying those things, actually, you need to have a look at what's going on for you. Because that's, you know, that phrase in itself is a sign that someone is struggling, that they're experiencing stress.
Yeah, and if that becomes a mindset, an overall mindset in an organization or in a company or in a workplace, then I think it becomes very dangerous, almost toxic.
And especially if it's coming from people quite high up, because that's setting the thing, you know, the precedent of how it should be. Or what, you know, you are role modeling if you're in a leadership role. And it's so important to actually think about, you know, when we say these things, what we're saying to the people, you know, who are looking up to us, who we are the role models for. You also mentioned about how do we also look after ourselves, because there is such a need, right? And I think, you know, paying attention to our own boundaries is really important. But the phrase I always come back to, and it's a phrase that just works for everything. It was Paul Gilbert, who does a lot of compassion-focused therapy, or he's the founder of it, so he does do a lot of it. The phrase, like, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility. And I think that phrase is so perfect for just going, okay, you've been through this, so it makes sense that you're responding in this way. And all of this makes sense. You know, that's not your fault, but your life, your behavior, your actions, all of that is your responsibility. And I think that's a really lovely way to actually, you can offer people help and support, but whether they take it or not, you know, you can't take control of them. And as soon as you start to try and take responsibility for all of these other people, when you're offering support, that's when you can get like burdened and burnt out with it. But actually being, this is what I've got, this is what I can help and support you, this is my boundaries and capacity. Whether you choose to use that in a way that's helpful for you, whether you're able to in the space, actually is up to you.
Well, I think I was just thinking, it's both sides really, right? I mean, if you're a role model, basically saying, okay, I am taking on responsibility, you're also role modeling in terms of like giving a message to others, like take responsibility for your behavior. And it is okay to take responsibility, because I think that's a really, really important message. What I see so often with people at work, especially if they're not in leadership positions, they have this, the one thing is, I'm not enough, because I haven't gotten to a leadership position. And the other thing, I still have to perform to show that I'm worthy. And within this, there is no space of really taking responsibility for your, I would translate it, for your feelings, for what's going on with you, because you're so focused on getting the job done that there is no, there's really not much left for you to focus on you.
And that's a really important point. That actually in today's world, in which mental health is, everyone should be talking about it. It's such an, you know, it's having an impact on so many people. Actually, that is your job. People in leadership roles need to actually take responsibility that emotions, feelings, that what's going on at that level for people and for themselves is part of their job and has to be. This has to be part of what we're doing in everything.
So now when we talk about the responsibility, going back to this, I think there's a really fine line between being in a leadership position and, well, I say that like coaching competencies, yeah, as a leader, but then being in a coaching position still doesn't mean you're a therapist. So I think there is something also, again, you talk a lot about boundaries. I know that. Where are the boundaries? You know, how long can you actually give a hand? And at what point do you maybe just help someone find support? Are there any rules about this? Or do you have particular advice about this?
Well, the first is like your competence within each space needs to be thought of. So yeah, if you're a coach and actually someone really needs mental health support, and you're feeling like actually this person is coming with, you know, talking about sort of emotions and feelings or have things that they need to process, it's your responsibility to make sure that person actually, you can say, I'm wondering actually if therapy is more fitting for what you need. So I think it's really important to, whatever you do, to really clearly define your role, what you can do within that, and set that, you know, at the beginning. So whether it's doing sort of a contract, and I do therapeutic contracts with people, which is to say, you know, this is what therapy, this is what we can do within it, this is what we can't, this is confidentiality within it. And I think whatever you're doing in any sort of mental health role, make that clear at the beginning and go back to it if you need to.
Yeah, but then when you're in a leadership position, maybe there in the first place you didn't take that role because you wanted to provide mental health support. You really wanted to just take on the leadership position because that's what you do. You rise up in the hierarchy and that's just what it is. That's what I hear very often. And I think there needs to be more conversations around the responsibility, but then also about maybe the challenges, because I truly think that not everyone is really made to hold that space. Not everyone can do it. For some people, it's really overwhelming because, as you said before, maybe they are not in touch with their emotions. And I actually see a lot of people who don't even want to go there, you know. So if you don't want to go there for yourself, how can you actually help others to go there?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if there is, much like I'm saying about modeling vulnerability, if you can't do that because actually for you that's too much and there's something you haven't processed and you're holding, that it might be worth having a look at that and thinking about that. Because I think we can only role model to people as far as we are in our journey with that too.
So we started with vulnerability and shame. And I kind of wanted us to go away from this a little bit because I thought, let's not go so deep right away.
Yeah.
I think in a way we're kind of circling back to that, right? How do I tap into my vulnerability? If I'm now listening to that and I'm saying, I don't think I have a mental health problem, but still, how do I tap into vulnerability? How do I look into that? What advice would you give or what thoughts do you have on that?
I think for me, shame is something that started from when I started my doctorate. It's what I actually did my doctoral thesis on, was looking at shame. I use compassion-focused therapy as my main model because it's the model that actually really taps into shame. So how do we become more vulnerable and connect into that? We start by being able to be vulnerable and honest with ourselves. You know, if you're pulling away from something or avoiding something, there could be something underneath that maybe need looking at or thinking about. And not everything needs to be done through therapy. This is one model. This is one way it's going to process and feel. You know, a lot of after a traumatic event, actually, we don't want therapists to come straight in because people process with communities, with loved ones. They you know, talk over and help process events, right? So you don't get professionals in at that point. And it's really key that you don't. And so I think vulnerability also with you start with yourself, but also it comes from community, from our really close relationships too. So see who you feel comfortable with. You know, the person that actually you maybe say a little bit more with and feel a bit more comfortable with, and open up some conversations, because what you will find, and I do this, you know, when in therapy, when people start being a little more vulnerable with the people that they love and trust and have really good boundaries with, what they notice is that people start being a bit vulnerable back. And the whole thing that people are holding becomes normalized. And it's so beautiful when you work with one person, how it can have this ripple effect. And it allows so many more people to be honest. And I mean, you know, when we think about leadership roles and also thinking about toxic masculinity within this too, it's so important to break this. You know, you're saying that anger is the only emotion that men should experience and express is awful for each individual and our communities. That's why I've got so many people in the prisons, right, who suppress everything apart from anger. So it's everyone's responsibility. But it's not your fault. Like, a lot of men have been raised in that way, as if emotions are weak. But what I often say to people is, if you're being vulnerable with someone and really feeling, is that a weak thing to do? And then people go, And it goes, actually, you know, yeah. It's a strength. It really is a strength to be vulnerable and honest and open with someone. And that, I think that, you know, the challenging that is key within leadership, actually.
But I have observed both in my job, but also in private life, is that we seem to lack the words for emotions very often. Like, you know, just sensing the emotion, then putting a word on it. And the next thing is not judging it. Like, and I think that are like three very essential steps. Like, first noticing it, becoming aware, feeling it, and not judging it at the end. Because what I hear so very often is like, oh, it's really good. You're in a good mood. You're happy. Perfect. Feel that emotion. But when it goes into another direction, not so good. And I think that's something we all need to learn together as we address emotions, that all emotions are equally valid.
Yeah.
And there is a message basically in every emotion as well.
Yeah, that we need to listen to. And it's key. All of them are key. You know, so much like I was talking about toxic masculinity, often for people who are sort of raised to be kind of female, are told that anger is absolutely not okay. And that's, you know, something when suppressed comes out in loads of different ways, through anxiety and through many things. And actually, that's one for me that I've had to have a life lesson around. I really struggle in expressing anger, and I've had to learn how to do it. And I feel much happier for letting that go and feeling it. So yes, accepting all of emotions and noticing which ones are a bit more problematic for you within your culture, within the way you've been raised and the spaces. I think that's an important thing to unpick as well for each of us.
Yeah. So funny, I have a little child, a daughter, and she's in her very angry phase right now. So we have a lot of tantrums, a lot of anger, and we're kind of working on like naming the emotion. Like, I am angry right now, but I also know it passes. And for me, as I talk to her about it, I notice that it's really hard for me to just name it and then guide her through it and not judge it. Like, oh, you're angry again. No, I'm not saying that, you know, and I have to remind myself. Yeah, that's a real learning process right now. Noticing as I'm teaching her to put words on her emotions, like how I actually evaluate emotions. And yeah, what I notice again and again, it takes time. It's a process, and it's nothing you can hurry, kind of. You just need to sit with it. You need to sit with the emotions. And what I'm learning is also I need to feel them in my body to become aware of what emotions do, like how they are processed in the body, or sometimes how they're not processed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're doing there, Martina, which is beautiful, is if you think about intergenerational messaging around sort of females and anger, and you're aware that maybe that's something that you're noticing, that you've got that messaging, and you're stopping your little girl from having that messaging around anger and not being acceptable. So well done. And that's so important, breaking these messages that actually causes a lot of problems for people.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so let's talk more about emotions in the workplace and in general. I would add, and with your parents.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's where it all begins. So thank you. Thank you very much. As we heard, you're very innovative with your methods. You're using AI in your therapy. So what's your vision when you think about the future of mental health, generally speaking? What's your vision?
My hope is that actually there's less need for therapy, because sort of mental health principles are throughout organizations, that it becomes like a necessary pillar of everything. You know, that people model vulnerability, that people have, whether it's sort of like peer mentors or things inbuilt into jobs, that people acknowledge that people can get burnt out and these signs are picked up on, and people are supported, so that actually there's less need within sort of the individual sort of healthcare. I think communities is the key to this, communities within workplaces and within, you know, the spaces outside of that. But my vision for the future is just that everyone has such a language around this. It's just talked about, you know, someone might say, oh, I'm feeling low today, and And that could be someone in a leadership role, right? And wouldn't that be an incredible space to be? But also that we have a bit more funding. The funding is just absolutely being stripped away. You know, leaders from the top, from politicians, who to, you know, anyone at the top of a business actually prioritizes himself and sees that as an important thing for individuals, for communities. And it will help in so many other ways. It's not something aside on it, is incorporated throughout.
I think you're making such an important point. Budget, simply.
Yeah.
Budget costs. I've been observing this for a while. That's the first thing that gets cut somehow in the workplace, but also in all kinds of areas where it's so much needed, right? You've mentioned this before. People are dropping out of care positions where there's so much need of actually support.
Yeah.
And at least in Germany, a reason for people dropping out is the overwhelm of the job in combination with payment that's not so good. I see that in my job. I'm kind of negotiating budgets in a time where inflation hits and things are getting more expensive. So overall, like, I think the message you're bringing across is if people in high leadership positions notice how important it actually is to kind of set budgets aside for this kind of work, we can all flourish and we can all develop and grow. And I think it benefits all of us as a society, as individuals, and also I think as people who have to manage all of these crises currently together.
Exactly. And it will be money that will be well spent, and not just on an individual level for all businesses. I mean, my feeling on it all is actually that you put that money in, you will get more than that out.
Yeah, the return will be much higher than when you kind of keep driving the van that's already in the shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly spot on, isn't it? Let's talk about it and let's prioritize it.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. So maybe a last closing question. I mean, we've talked about so much now. We've talked about vulnerability, shame, about creating safe spaces in general, but also in the workplace. We've talked about how you can actually notice that something is going on with the person and how you can listen, be empathetic, compassionate. So many important topics. But like, if there is just one thing you want the listeners to take away from this podcast today, what would that be?
So I'm just so excited about using AI for the safe place. I would say ask a friend who's got the AI sort of image maker, and make yourself a safe place. You know, think about the what you see, what you smell, what you feel like. Write it out and ask them just to create that image. Get it on your wall, get it in your office, and use it as a way to actually help ground yourself in those moments, so you can actually go and do the work that you want to and connect in a way you want to.
Awesome. Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, I would like to even think this further, you know, when you're in a team, and what's the safe place for the team and how would that look like? And there's a really critical situation, or I don't know, if there is conflict in the team, go there together maybe and then try to solve the conflict. That was just an idea I just had. So I think, we can see it opens up so much creativity.
You could do a team thing where you all come together and you create a team safe space and you get that printed on the wall and you've got that. So when you have some conflict, you can look and go, okay, we created this together. So how do we get here?
How do we get there again? Yeah,
that's, and it's fun and it's playful and it's all the things that actually help with connection and, you know, and that team cohesion, which is what leadership is about, right?
Emma, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your insights, and I think also a lot of like what you've learned over many years of working in therapy and in your field. So thank you very much for that. For our Mindway listeners, if you want to know more about Emma, just look into the show notes. I will also link her Instagram profile and her website, and just reach out, ask questions, get in touch. I think we're both very, very happy to share and to talk and to engage in conversations about this really, really important topic on mental health. So Emma, thank you very much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. And so this is the first podcast I've done, and it's actually been a pleasure.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Podcast version anymore.
Exactly. Very happy. So thank you for mentioning.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah, to all of you out there, if you liked today's episode, make sure to subscribe to the Mindway podcast on Spotify or iTunes or any other channel that you like and you prefer. And if you have any additional questions or comments or remarks, just add them either on our Mindway Instagram page or on our LinkedIn Mindway page. We're really, really happy to hear from you. And also maybe just leave a 5-star rating for us. That really helps to promote the podcast and to keep on doing our work, which we do for free, but we really love what we do. And we want to kind of help everyone to grow and share this growth as a path to a better future for all of us. So thank you very much. My name is Martina Weifenbach. I am the founder of Mindway. This is the Mindway podcast. And if you liked it, just tune in again the next time. Stay happy, stay healthy, and see you soon. Bye.